Thanks, Stefan, and thanks for the organizers to invite me. Also, of course, thanks to the collaborators, students and collaborators who did most of the hard work. And just because we don't have coffee and cake during the breaks, I remind you of the plum pudding and marble cake, which are, of course, also kind of end members of mental structure. Let's get started. So this is kind of the marble cake where recycled heterogeneity gets mixed into the mantle. And from this model, we have a good understanding of the mantle composition, because at least the upper mantle is sampled by mid-ocean ridge melting, and we can infer or invert for the upper mantle composition petrologically, and that's what we call a pyrolite. But we don't really know very well the bulk composition of the lower mantle or the bulk composition of the bulk silicate earth. So this is a bit of a puzzle. What would be, again, the recipe of this cake? There are end member models that have been put forward that the whole mantle, including the lower mantle, is a pyrolite composition, or maybe in terms at least of the magnesium to silica ratio and other major silicate elements, it's more close to a chondrite, because a chondrite is a building block of the solar system, and it's kind of a bit odd that the mantle composition is quite far away in terms of, for example, magnesium to silica ratio from the chondrite composition. So that's one of the major motivations for this talk. The other motivation is this weird boundary that people have been already talking about at 1,000 kilometers depth. So whereas some slabs go down into the deep mantle and we have whole mantle convection, some other slabs just stop sinking at a weird depth where there's no phase transition. And there are also key geochemical constraints which motivate this study, going back to the question if the whole mantle is well mixed and the upper mantle composition is the same as the lower mantle composition. At least there are some regions in the Earth which preserve to the present day these primordial geochemical ratios. So this is one of these short-lived systems that Dominique has been talking about, and at the Ontong Java Plateau or in Hawaii and Samoa, there is some indication that even in the present-day mantle, there must be a reservoir somewhere, we don't know where and we don't know how big, that is primordial. And one of these models that can explain the survival of primordial heterogeneity is the kind of plum pudding or blob model. So somewhere in the Earth mantle, there is preservation of really old material that is maybe even older than the moon-forming giant impact. But yeah, we really don't know where. Paul showed this slide. There are different cartoons that have been put forward, and some of them can be ruled out, like this one, like stratified convection, but we don't really know to distinguish between all of these conceptual models. First of all, how do we create this type of primordial heterogeneity? So while this, for example, this tungsten isotopic system was still alive in the first 50 million years of solar system or evolution, there has to be some differentiation event. Well, there's core formation, but there is also, for example, magma ocean crystallization. And when you crystallize the magma ocean, then actually the liquidous phase in the lower mantle has a magnesium to silica ratio of 1. So this is bridgmanite. Magnesium-rich bridgmanite will be the first phase of a wide compositional pressure and temperature range to crystallize from the basal magma ocean. We've also heard from Paul that presumably, and Stefan has been working on this, there was a basal magma ocean, and either by fractional crystallization or by batch crystallization, you would form the first solids in the middle. This would still be bridgmanite, but depending if you do batch crystallization or fractional crystallization, the degrees of crystallization are different. So here you make a mushy mantle and then you compact it. In this case, you would get a more iron-rich basal magma ocean, but also more iron-enriched, so denser cumulates. And this will become important later on. So the magma ocean cumulates are variably dense, depending on the formation scenario you might consider for the basal magma ocean. So the outline of this talk, after this short introduction, is how can this compositional heterogeneity be sustained over that is formed in the early Earth, but it's also formed throughout Earth history, how can it be sustained in the convecting mantle? And there are two kind of dynamic scenarios that I will be talking about. One is what I call unmixing, and this is related to the marble cake mantle. And the other one is related to compositional heterogeneity, and that is how you preserve the blobs in the convecting mantle. And then, of course, we want to compare this to observation and test these kind of models. So let's talk about unmixing first. So this is just first order compositional with thermochemical mantle convection model, and we've seen some of these. Here you just start with a homogeneous composition in the beginning, and all the heterogeneity is introduced at subduction zones. So blue is basalt, and blue is Hartsburgite, red is basaltic lithology. And these lithologies have a different density profiles. So basalt tends to sink to the base of the mantle because it's denser than the other, than Hartsburgite or pyrolite, which is like a mixture of the two materials. Throughout the mantle, except for this density crossover region just below the 660 discontinuity. So here basalt becomes buoyant, and that explains why basalt tends to accumulate just above the 660, where it's basically sitting like an iceberg. So like a basaltic blob would be sitting like an iceberg near the 660 in these models. But eventually it would sink to the lowermost mantle. Maybe it's entrained by a slab or something like that. And yeah, that's the marble cake here in the mid-mantle. So Yun, he just finished his PhD, and he took these kind of models to the next level, varying several parameters, like the viscosity profile, which is uncertain, as we've seen. And in his models already, after half a billion year or 1 billion year, this kind of basalt-rich reservoir is established in the lower mantle transition zone. And just beneath the 660, there's actually a complementary Hartsburgite-enriched reservoir. And after a couple of billion years, these piles are formed, and then they are pushed around by convection. Eventually, you get these like avalanches, compositional avalanches, which is one mechanism to remove basalt eventually from the transition zone. So you have like a balance and between segregation and entrainment of basalt and these the enrichment of the mantle transition zone is kind of steady state. And also it depends not very much on parameters. So as I mentioned, the Yun varied, for example, the upper mantle viscosity, mantle transition zone viscosity, lower mantle viscosities, and you get this enrichment. So this is basalt fraction and depth. Get this enrichment in the transition zone for all these models. I mean, this is not a global layer, it's a regional layer, but on average, you always see this enrichment of about 40% basalt in the mantle transition zone compared to a global average of 20% basalt in the mechanical mixed mantle. Also, you get piles of variable size and thickness at the base of the mantle, and you also, in most models, except maybe models with a very high lower mantle viscosity that is maybe several hundred times higher than the upper mantle viscosity, then it's not so pronounced. But in many models, you also get a distinct Hartsburgite enriched layer just below the 660. So that's a robust mantle prediction model. Another robust model is, because the lower mantle and the transition zone are enriched in basalt, that kind of means that the whole, so they're enriched in basalt compared to the upper mantle. So that means that the whole composition of the bulk silicate earth, even though the mantle is convecting as a whole, as you saw in the movie, is shifted towards basaltic compositions. So the bulk silicate earth composition would be enriched in silica, also enriched in calcium and aluminium. And that, of course, that has implications for the light element budget of the core and so on. So this is kind of an interesting side result. How do we test this? There have been regional studies which are kind of consistent with these predictions. So for example, by McGuire, so this is with Saskia Hoos and collaborators, looking at the Samoa plume, but also the Hawaiian plume, that there is, here it's shown as a gap in tomography, but when inverting modeling the receiver functions, this seems to be mostly consistent with a Hertzbergite enriched layer of about 70 kilometers thickness just beneath the 660. And there have been also papers that are consistent with basalt enrichment regionally at the base of the transition zone. But we wanted to look at this in a more global framework. So we exploited a recent paper by recent study by Lauren, who looked at the SS precursors globally and as a big database. And we predicted the reflection. So Jun, I should say, predicted the reflection coefficients for two different models. So the layered model is basically what you saw. Let's just call it a layered model, but this is the model prediction using a realistic depth profile for the basalt density. And then you get a wide range of basalt fractions basically in the transition zone with a peak around 0.35 or something. And that implies a wide range here in this histogram of reflection coefficients that you would expect for SS precursors that bounce off of the 660. So you would not only have these reflection coefficients around 0.03, but you would also have a bunch around 0.01, which is kind of distinct when you compare that to a kind of a reference model. Here, this is an artificial model where we kind of switched off this density crossover, and we don't get a lot of stratification in the transition zone. The basalt fraction is around 0.2. It's a little bit higher than 0.2, but not much. And here, this histogram of synthetic, basically, reflection coefficients that we expect is much narrower, and you don't get these low reflection coefficients, which you would expect in a stratified mantle compositionally layered mantle. So this would be a good way to distinguish between these two models. I'm not going to go into the details of the method, but we basically did synthetic tests, and we clarified that in an epicentral distance range of 120 to 140, we can correct for effects, for example, attenuation and so on. And in this distance range, it works pretty well because there are no interfering phases. And once we take the observed data, correct it such that basically the amplitude ratios, we correct them such that we can translate them into reflection coefficients, we get the corrected data, and then we can compare the corrected data to the layered model, and we see a pretty good fit. What the observed data does not show is this tail at low reflection coefficients, and that's just because, if these regions occur in the mantle, unfortunately they cannot be observed in the data because you don't get a precursor, you don't get a reflection. The reflection coefficients are just too low. So what happens is you would just increase the size of the bin, do more stacking until you see a reflection, but the minimum reflections that you can see correspond to reflection coefficients of 0.02. So I don't think this is really a discrepancy. This is just we need to maybe have more data or improve the seismic methods to be able to recover this. So this is consistent with the layered model, in our opinion. But we also cannot really distinguish it from the non-layered model or even a homogeneous model where we kicked out the compositional variations completely. The non-layered model and the homogeneous model are a bit narrower than the observed or corrected data. That also you see here that the PDFs are going higher, right? So that tells you that's a bit narrower. Don't worry about it shifted left or right. This is there are some uncertainties in the correction, so maybe we've just undercorrected or overcorrected the data. But in the end, I don't think we can really distinguish between the two models. But this is maybe homework for the seismologists in the room that we should try maybe in the future to look at if there are regions which have a very low reflection coefficient at the 660. And of course, I'm interested to get your comments. And now let me move on to the second part. So the effects of compositional rheology in the lower mantle. And this is mostly again, motivated by the question whether there's chondritic material in the lower mantle, and chondritic or bridge magnetic material with a magnesium to silica ratio of around 1 would be much more, up to a factor of 1,000, much more viscous than pyrolytic material in the lower mantle, particularly if you have this interconnected weak layering. So once the ferroperoclase interconnects, you would expect pyrolytic material to be much less viscous than chondritic material. And this would be a kind of, or I can show on the next slide, which is a model with a viscosity contrast of about 100 between these two different materials. So if you, this is the initial condition with bridge magnetic material in the lower mantle and pyrolite in the upper mantle. And at some point you get a compositional overturn, the temperature composition. So composition is here with three different compositions, primordial material in red, hartzburgite in whitish beige colors, and basalt in blue. So then you get whole mantle convection with subduction, but most of the upwellings and downwellings are accommodated around these primordial intrinsically viscous blobs. And they are also pushing around these blobs, like for example the slabs. And blobs of intermediate size can be preserved over several billions of years in these models. These are models with plate tectonic behavior. And if you look at the final radial profiles, you see that a lot of primordial material is preserved in the mid-mantle, and you also have basaltic material being preserved in piles here at the bottom, and also, again, in the mantle transition zone. So we can basically have a hybrid model between the plum pudding with these blobs and the marble cake. And at the same time, we can also get these piles, which also, as Karin showed, are required to explain the LLSVPs, at least intermediate-sized piles. So this is similar to the BEAMS model, but there's some differences, and depending on parameters, we also get a slightly different behavior. So this is the buoyancy number, or the density anomaly of the primordial material. This is the strength, or the viscosity contrast between the primordial material and the pyrolite. And for example, the red color shows you how much primordial material is being preserved. So that's mostly happens for relatively high viscosity contrasts. But there are different regimes. So not just the regime that I just showed, but there is a regime at high buoyancy numbers and high viscosity contrast where this primordial material is preserved as piles at the core mantle boundary. There's another regime where there's diffuse domains which preserve some primordial material, but not much, so it's already mixed in. There's a well-mixed kind of marble cake regime where most of the primordial material is processed, but you have marble cake and piles. And this is the last but not least regime, which I showed before, which is dominated by blobs, but we also have piles, these viscous blobs, which are similar to the beams that have been suggested earlier. And what we can do in these types of models is we can look at the different columns and analyze them further to look at correlations. So we find that the primordial material is mostly preserved here where there's little horizontal velocity. So this is not in the upwellings, not in the downwellings, but in the neutral regions. That's where we preserve primordial material. And also the primordial material is warm. It's not hot like plumes, but it's warm. So there's a positive correlation with a temperature and with the age of the underlying pile. And I should say that there is indeed a positive correlation between the thickness also of the pile, so a basaltic material at the bottom and primordial material in the center of the model. So it's slightly different than in this cartoon from the BEAMS paper. So we find that in the spherical models with Earth-like tectonics, that the pile should be actually beneath beneath these blobs. So the blobs are best preserved above a pile where also the heat flux is, the CMB heat flux is lower. That might even explain why the plumes are coming, seem to come from the edges of the piles, because on top of the pile you have a blob which is in the way. Maybe it even explains why plumes are branching. If they hit a pile, if they hit a blob, then they have to go to the side and maybe in two different directions, or even three different directions, as we saw earlier. I would just say that Matteo, who's in the room, will carry on this work, and he will, for example, look how the properties of basalt affect this correlation and other things. And he already saw that if the basalt is less dense and less viscous, then this correlation might look different. I will skip these slides about geochemistry. Sorry for the geochemists in the room. But we can compare these predictions to geochemical and geophysical observations. So if you have blobs in the mantle, then this might explain why some slabs are stagnating at 1,000 kilometers depth, because they're just hitting intrinsically viscous blob. It might also explain why the viscosity is higher in the mid-mantle, so this viscosity hill, because you just happen to have a compositional structure there. Plumes are sometimes deflected at about 1,000 kilometers depth. That might be just related to them flowing around a rotating pile, and sometimes these piles rotate, as we saw. The mid-mantle reflections, I think we've seen a similar figure before, but they are widespread reflectors at about 1,000 kilometers depth. This is again underside reflections, SS precursor work. These are over thousands of kilometers, so, and maybe we're looking at one of these things. Maybe we're looking at something else. But this is not inconsistent with the idea. So for the primordial geochemical reservoirs that are evident in geochemistry, this might be another way, another place to put, for example, positive tungsten anomalies, or the slides that I skipped are talking to 142 neodymium anomalies potentially buried in these piles, which are stable, but they are also very slowly eroded, so they can be sampled by geochemical proxies. And as I mentioned in the first slide, it might be a way to balance the silica budget of the planet compared to the solar system or the composition of the solar photosphere, basically, in terms of rocky elements. Okay, I know a lot of seismologists in the room, so ideally we would like to compare this to seismic tomography. These primordial domains in the middle of the mantle, they have a thermal effect. I showed that they are slightly warmer, but they also have a chemical effect because they are enriched in bridgmanite, and that would make them slightly faster. And unfortunately, as these preliminary results are showing, this is mostly trading off with each other, and they are kind of hidden or nearly invisible. So we don't necessarily expect to see them, so it's not inconsistent with what we currently see. But of course, we cannot, unfortunately, really distinguish between a well-mixed model and a mix a model with blobs. And again, Matteo will look at this further in his second part of his PhD. He will use XSM or something similar to propagate seismic waves through these models, and then maybe look for specific signals in the synthetic data that might be able to distinguish between these two end members, so the marble cake and the plum pudding in principle. So that brings me to the conclusion. A basalt Hartzburgite enriched layer above and below the 660 can be maintained in the mantle despite ongoing mantle convection. So this is due to active unmixing that is kind of going on while the mantle is convecting. And intrinsically strong heterogeneity can be also preserved as mid to large size blobs in the mid-mantle for a wide range of conditions. So there was a big parameter space, right? But then we need to do some further testing using geophysical and geochemical data to verify this regime, if it really applies to the Earth. And just as Hauke mentioned, I would like to advertise this recent AGU monograph about much of the topics that have been discussed in this meeting. Thank you so much for your attention. Mm-hmm.